Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights need to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Michelle Coulson. Michelle is the CEO and founder of Remote Rebellion, which enables people to design their dream lives with freedom and flexibility by getting remote work and connects remote-first companies with top global talent. In this episode, she and Dane explore the realities of today's remote job market, from why landing a remote role is harder than it looks, to how companies can stand out in a sea of sameness. They unpack the myths around remote culture, the overlooked power of employer branding, and what both job seekers and employers get wrong in the hiring process. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined from Bulgaria by Michelle Coulson. Michelle is the Chief Remote Rebel and founder of Remote Rebellion. So we're going to talk a lot about recruiting remote workers. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on so late at night.
It's okay. It was later for you.
Yeah.
I bet people are thinking that doesn't sound like a Bulgarian accent.
That's right. That's it. I saw Leeds on your story. I played cricket against a lot of people from Yorkshire. And knew a good number of rugby league players out of your part of the world too. But tell us more about you. How did you come to be doing this work?
Well, there's a long version usually, and I'll give the sort of a medium-sized version because it depends how far back you go, really. But so I'm like yourself, my background in recruitment. I fell into recruitment like most people do because someone told me it was a good way to make some money. And I'm like, oh, I'll do that for a little bit and then I'll get out of it. And then 11 years later, I'm still kind of in the space.
Yeah.
I actually used to work for an agency, then I worked in-house. And I loved what I did. I didn't think it was something that I would end up doing for long. I didn't think I would enjoy it. But I got a kick out of this hunting in a way of like this investigative. Someone tells you that you've got this person that they need to look for. And I'm like, I'm going to find the perfect person for this role. And as you know, being in agencies, it didn't always look in the nicest possible way. But I loved that. I loved working in recruitment. So I actually worked for an Aussie company for a little while. It was a software development house. Loved working at that organization. I got loads of autonomy. And then pandemic happened. And just before the pandemic, actually, 2016, 2017, I was nagging and pushing my manager to say, listen, we're hiring software developers. No one wants to come and work with us. So they keep asking if we can work remote. And he's like, well, no, we have to go to the office. And I'm like, well, we're not paying that well. And the people are not going to, that was the time, the heyday for software engineers when they could ask whatever the hell they wanted. So yes. They could be like, what are you going to give me? And you really had to beg them to come and work for your company, especially on a perm role when they were getting £400, £500 a day to do contract positions. things have changed now.
Yeah.
So I just said, we need to offer something else. We need to offer remote working. So I nagged and pushed. And for about a year it took me, I managed to get hybrid and we had to go to the office on Fridays. So that was a real win. Then the pandemic happened. Obviously, everyone was working remotely. And I was miserable. I was living in London. I was lonely. I didn't realize I was lonely at the time, but all of my friends were moving out, buying houses in the suburbs, and it left me in this kind of like, there's this lonely place in the city of like, what do I want to do? And my friend said, why don't you come to Bali for a little bit until the offices open up? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So I did, and I figured I'd go for a couple of months until my boss calls me back in. He called and was like, right, you need to come back to the office now. It's April 2021, we're opening up.
Yeah.
I said, hell no, absolutely no way I'm going back. I was like, I've been working remotely for the past 18 months. Why can't I continue to do this from here? And he was like, well, no, this is what we need to do. We work in the office. I was like, that's not a reason. That's just like, because I said so, that you say to your kids just to shut them up. And it wasn't like that corporate speak. I wasn't for it. So I quit and I started looking for remote work and realized how hard it was. And I was like, oh, I feel a bit arrogant now. I thought I could just drop into any other role. I'm really good at what I do. I've been working in recruitment for 7 years. It was 2021, where it was the heyday of recruitment.
Yeah.
But I realized how hard it was because remote was very different. And that's when Remote Rebellion was born, I guess, because I realized if I'm having a hard time, not to blow my own trumpet, but I'm good at what I do, I've got a good network. If I'm struggling to get remote work in this market, other people are going to be struggling too.
Yeah.
So it was almost like reverse engineering recruitment. All of the things I'd learned over the years of how to find the right candidate could be reverse engineered on how to find the right remote role. So that's, I guess, where Remote Rebellion was born.
That's awesome. And I love the name. Like, tell me more about Rebellion and Maverick. You got all these cool words that mean stuff.
I've never been a fan of rules for the sake of rules.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to, when I had that conversation with my boss, like, I'm actually on good terms with him. He kills me for saying, like, you're making me out to be the villain that made you come back to this big bad office. And like, I was like, no, we're still friends. But like, he was just doing his job. He had orders from above, right? So I said, why can't we go? Why can't I work from here? And it was pretty much computer says no, if anyone's watched Little Britain. And it was just like, oh, you just can't. And I was like, that's not a reason. Like, so I was almost like, it felt like all these companies were calling people back into the office, the big return to office. And it felt like it needed a rebellion because I was like, no, we need to push back on this. Just because this is the way that things were before doesn't mean we have to continue the way it was before. I know there's differences, but I liken the return to office back when World War II ended and all the women who were doing men's jobs were like, right,
go
women
home.
back in the kitchen now. And they're like, no, things have changed.
Yeah.
And still decades later, we're still figuring out the equality with men and women in the workplace.
Yep.
And I really think remote work's the same. We're not going to get there overnight. There's going to be a transition period.
Yeah, I agree. I think some people forget as well that work once happened in your house. Like if you're in a craft industry hundreds of years ago, you're a basket weaver. You weren't going to a factory to do basket weaving. You were doing bit piece work and dropping off your complete products or your part of the product to the next stage. And it's just like the office and the warehouse and the factory are still very new in the history of humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
I think that's why so many people are loving and embracing this remote. Like when you said Bali, like I'm a big surfer. I love Bali. Like if I had been footloose and fancy free working in Bali in COVID, I don't think I would have come back either.
Oh, and the thing is, like, it doesn't have to be about, like, you know, going to some tropical place. Like,
No. Sometimes
I spend 2 months in Manchester, and if anyone's been there, that's not so tropical. But I get to, like, hang out with my nephews and take them to school in the morning. I get to sit with my sister and have a cup of tea before she goes to work. And those little joys of snippets. I probably spend more time with my mum and my sister living not in the same country than I did when I was in London. I just had to sneak for one night away before I had to go back to the office on Monday. I had to spend more quality time with them now.
That's my experience too, particularly with my family in Australia. And I've just realized by you saying mum and sister in Manchester that I got the Yorkshire call wrong. So that's a problem, isn't it? Yorkshire
War
and
of the Roses. Yeah, the War of the Roses.
I'm surprised you didn't just hit stop and leave.
I lived in Leeds for a while, so I can. It's like, I love Leeds, so I'll let you off.
There you go. No, that's very cool. So when you think about that whole concept, like it's hard to find remote work, what were some of those problems that you started to identify and solve for as you built Remote Rebellion? What were those, you know, catching factors that you were like, this is what we're looking for?
I think the main thing, like from the job seeker side, and it's a supply and demand issue. Like it's as simple as that. The more that, you know, and this has just been declining since 2021, the amount of remote jobs that there were back in 2020, it's dwindled. But the competition or the demand for those jobs is still high. So I use this stat quite a lot of like, in 2023, 9% of jobs on LinkedIn were remote and 43% of all applications goes to that 9%. So you can see that disparity in what people want and what's actually out there.
Yeah.
So it's as simple as getting yourself noticed and showing your value. And from the company side, they become a bit complacent and a little bit arrogant because they're like, oh, you should want to work for us. Like, you know, just because we're paying you. And it's like it really needs to be an exchange on both sides. You hopefully wouldn't go on into the dating world of being like, so you're so lucky to have me, like you get to have a relationship with me, like look at you, like it's an exchange. You want to learn something about each other and see if it's a fit, right?
Yeah,
hopefully.
yeah absolutely. So how do you create that connection if people are trying to, you know, engage with each other? I know you were talking pre-show that you're building job fairs. Like, has it become more than just an interview like you and I are having on a virtual screen? Like, what's driving that value connection?
More and more people I'm speaking with, and COVID has been a catalyst for this, but so many people I'm speaking with are in their 40s, in their 50s. They never actually stop to think, what do I want? And it's really, especially North Americans, they've been like sleepwalking through life, like going for the next promotion, going for the next latest car, and not actually asking what they want, because, well, you just go to college, you get a good degree, you get this, and then you do that, and then you get... And it's really, really sad that I asked some of these people, I'm like, oh, so, and you might have, you know, back in your recruitment days when you say no, mm-hmm. So what are you looking for? For good recruiters will ask someone, what are you looking for?
Yep.
They won't just go in and tell you about the job. And some people are like, well, I'm good at this and I'm good at that and I'm good at that. And I'm like, that's not what I asked you. I asked you what you're looking for. And they're so not used to being asked this question.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Like, I really like feel for people that they're having this existential crisis of what they want. So I think that's a big thing of having people on both sides, on the company side and on the individual. What do I want? What's important to me? What's my absolute ideal? What am I happy to accept? And what are my non-negotiables?
Mm.
Because there's some gives sometimes. Like if we bundle them into pillars. There's a salary pillar. You know, what is it when you're in recruitment? You can either have it fast, cheap, quality.
Yeah, the triangle.
The triangle.
Yeah.
And it's the same. Something's got to give sometimes. You're very unlikely it's going to get all three. And it's the same when you're looking for a house. Unless you've got bags of money hidden in under your mattress. Like, something's got to give. You're not going to get a sea view with 20 grand, you know? You're going to have to like adjust it, just the parameters somewhere.
No, that's very cool. So you're...
Did I answer your question or did
I... Yeah, no, totally, totally. No, you talked about how we connect and what I heard you say was it's about asking the right questions. And that what do you want question, actually, my coach has been doing a lot of work with me on that and with my team. And it's fascinating. And it actually takes multiple times with a team member to get to the bottom of it. Because if I ask a team member right now, to your point earlier, like what do you want? And they're like, well, I want the promotion. Okay, well, what do you want the promotion for? Well, because I want the nice car. And I'm like, well, what do you want the nice car for? And you have to go through a whole bunch of stuff. And then at the end of the day, you realize that they want what they've been conditioned to want as team members. And that one of the questions that Christopher, my coach, has helped me ask is to say, okay, well, just pause for a minute. If money didn't matter and what people thought about you didn't matter, what would you really want? And all of a sudden things start coming up. It's like, well, I would love to live in San Diego.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I would love to spend more time coaching kids' sports. And it's just like, well, that's, now we're getting somewhere. That's something that we can talk about and kind of craft into the connection here.
Or even like that asking, I give a scenario of if you didn't have to work anymore, you had your accommodation covered and you had, let's say, I'm not even going to say a big amount, you had accommodation, healthcare, your basic needs covered, and you have 5,000 going into your account every month. So you're not a millionaire, but you've got enough to be, you know, disposable.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do with your days? And people are like, oh, and I think that gives some perspective. And the people who say, oh, I'd be pretty much doing what I'm doing now, but just not working. I think that's wonderful. Like, that's the answer that you want to get.
Lucky them. Yeah. That's cool. So it helps to build some connection around what they want. What about like work hours, like remote work? Your example was in Bali. Like, how are you finding with that supply and demand curve, people are adjusting to say, hey, I'll work non-standard hours. Maybe I'm not working the 9 to 5.
Yeah, I think from a business perspective, I'm seeing it from my own business. We have people in Asia, Europe, and North America. So having those time zones can be difficult sometimes. And I've actually gone a bit of a, not a 360, but let's call it a 180. I'm like, work wherever you want, whenever you want, totally flexible, totally async. And I'm only recently bringing in office hours because I feel like there's a value of having even, I've only got it for like 1 hour 2 days a week where everyone's online at the same time. So it's really minuscule, but I think there's value in that of knowing that people can have that real time connection and be able to get their questions answered in real time. So it's not a one size fits all. It's like trying different things and not being so dismissive on we've got to have a 9-to-5 or we've got to have fully flexible. We've got like trying out different things and be like, do you know what? This isn't working for us now because of X, Y, Z. And I think that's where businesses have typically been so stuck in this 9-to-5. That was, you know, it was created by Henry Ford. Like things have changed. Like get with the times.
Big time. No, I think it's very real. And that whole office hours concept, I know Annie Dean with Atlassian, she talks a lot about it. Like if you can put it on the calendar that my team in Sydney and Kuala Lumpur and, you know, Malaysia, and then all the way over here in the UK, if they've all got that one time block that's not ridiculous and they can get together, it's amazing how versatile people will be and how much they'll use that time too. That's super cool.
Yeah, exactly. And also the same on remote working. I have changed my stance on that slightly. I used to be like, nope, everything can be done fully remote. You never have to get together. Junior people don't need to ever go to an office. Like, I've changed my stance on that. And I think people early on in their career learning something new, I do feel like there's value in them having them together in one place. And I also have had my team together all here in Bulgaria. There was the European team got together.
Yeah.
And we got so much out of those 2 days, like really did. So I'm not anti-office. I'm not anti-getting together, but there's trade-offs. So if I suddenly said, okay, we need to be based in Bulgaria, I don't get access to however many billion people in the world of talent. Pool is much narrower. So you've got trade-offs and just to accept that, really.
Yeah. It's interesting as well. Before the show, you were telling me how Bulgaria has been great. I think you said 2 months there and you've been able to spend some time snowboarding. Are you seeing when people are putting together a candidate attraction strategy or going to reach out to candidates that you're starting to be able to recruit from communities of interest, like, hey, we're going to go and commute from the recruit from the snowboarding community or the surfing community or the, you know, coffee loving urban community, whatever it might be.
See, my perspective is a bit different because I honestly think people I'm working with in remote first companies don't feel like they need a candidate attraction strategy. And you and I would disagree with that because we know that like it's important because they're getting inundated with applications because of that whole supply demand.
43.9, yeah.
They either don't have time to think about it or they don't think that they need it. So like, well, we've got loads of applications, but they don't necessarily have the right employer branding strategy to be attracting the right kind of people.
Yeah.
And like you said, that they're about going to different communities. I think the digital nomad community and the remote working community even has this bad reputation of like, I'm sat on my laptop by the beach. I'm not doing much work. I'm just having a holiday.
Yeah.
And it's got that bad reputation when really they need to rebrand and be like, we are doing good work and you want to come and work for us because we are aligned with these values. And actually to speak to the people they want to speak to and put off the people that they don't. If you are going to be working, if they expect you to be on call 24 hours a day, say that and attract those kind of people who want to hustle. You know, like, not that I agree with it, but if, at least they're being, you know, open and transparent. And that's the main thing of like, just say who you are and what you can offer and the right kind of people will be attracted to you.
Yeah, I like that a lot. How do you do the selection then? So if you've got such a big demand for remote work and a small supply, do you find that you're having to do a lot of assessment centers or, you know, are people able to digitally pick which three candidates they'll invite for interviews? Like, how does that kind of tuning work in your world?
I think a lot of people feel like AI is the answer, but I'm a bit old school in that sense. Like, I just don't think it's there yet to be able to do this. So I have a really simple process, using Google Form, using a spreadsheet. I have one simple question in my requirements for when I'm hiring people, and it's something like, the secret code is 28, you'll need this to apply. Mm-hmm. And in the question, what is the secret code?
Just to get the bots out.
Do you know how many people don't fill that in?
That's scary.
About 80%.
So, and you don't think that's just bots, you think that's just people clicking the apply button and...
A bit of both. Yeah, there's people out there on Fiverr and Upwork that will apply to 100 jobs for $10 or something for you. So there's tools that are doing these things. So
oh, I didn't know that. That's scary.
Yep.
That is scary. Yep.
They exist. So it's a catch-22 because candidates are so sick of being rejected after rejected and speaking to a bot and not getting to speak to a human. But then recruiters are really frustrated because they're just getting bots speaking bots speaking to bots.
I know. Yeah. It's really interesting thinking that when we're all getting so smart with technology, we're also getting really dumb.
Yeah, it's true. It's a good way of phrasing it.
It's nuts. That's very cool. So if there's a candidate out there, let's say someone who's just determined they need to work remote, whether it's lifestyle or they've got a parent to care for, whatever the reason is, and they haven't done remote work before, like where do you tend to give people advice on this is where to start, here's how to start, you know, coming up with your approach to finding the right roles?
Well, as in how to find a remote role or how to discover how to work remotely better?
Probably more how to find the right remote role. So if you're because not all roles are created equal. So if you're going remote, you know, is there a particular, you talked about earlier, there's the what do you want, but then there's like your non-negotiables. Like, is that an important part of the job applicant, you know, criteria?
Yeah, I think so. What I would tend to advise people who have no, let's say, so I helped someone who was a kitchen fitter in the UK to get a role. Like, you know, that's very much not, it's a tradie, you know, they're very much not a digital person. So we worked together on figuring out what it is that they enjoy doing, the things that they'd done before, things that light them up. And during COVID, he'd been creating these desks that he could make for people working from home. And he said he really enjoyed actually learning how to sell them on this website and learning e-commerce, learning SEO. So we were using the experience that he did have, and we were targeting. He ended up becoming an SEO consultant for other tradies and showing them how they could like rank
very
on Google.
Cool.
So yes, he doesn't have any experience remote, but he could leverage what he does know and the industry he does know to speak to those. Like, because most tradies I meet are absolutely useless at admin. They're really good at what they do, but when it comes to organizing their time, and he would admit to the same. So actually speaking to that and understanding that I know where you're coming from, the same helping transitioning teachers and going into the ed tech sector, you know, using the industry experience they have, not necessarily this experience doing the job.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's really good advice. My wife and I used to talk about this concept of, we called it chicks with hammers, but we're like, because a lot of the tradies are, they don't love the admin, it's really hard running around to lots of different houses to look at jobs that may not be real jobs, or you might be bidding against three other people. And we're like, it would be way easier if all of the mums in the community that wanted to work but can't find remote work could just go around each other's places with a phone and like, map the job out, work out who should come and what tools they should bring and what equipment they should bring. And then someone can actually just turn up and do the work and they don't have to do all of the messing around. And we were playing with that at the back end of COVID. And it's just like, they're the ways that you can think about leveraging people's talents or networks. Yeah. Because in that case, it was just like, hey, you know, you're going to know other mums at the school because you're doing pick up and drop off, or dads. Like, it's not gender specific, but it's fascinating where people can create that opportunity for themselves.
Yeah. And I think people are missing out on a trick, or companies are missing out on a trick for getting someone's diversity of thought. Like, even if they've not done the job before, they come in with this wealth of knowledge of knowing exactly your ICP. Like, if they get into the heads of that person, You can't teach that. You can't teach someone what it is to be doing that job on a daily basis. So I think they're missing a trick there.
Oh, totally. Totally. On that note, like with your platform, it looks like you help candidates get ready to go and find their jobs. But are you also helping employers to do the recruiting from that sector? Okay, so you've got both sides of it. When you're doing that, are your employers asking you to sort of vouch for and reference, you know, how long have people stayed in remote jobs? How successful have they been? Is that different from people that have been in, you know, in office jobs? Is there a different expectation on assessment of performance?
It's an interesting question. It's not something I've been asked. I generally get the question more on whether they are a seasoned remote worker. Do they understand what it means to work asynchronously? Do they communicate well? Can they self-manage? Can they?
Yes.
I think so many people think that they want to work remotely and like the idea of it, but they can't actually do it. They need to be kicked up the bum by someone being in the same seat as them, or they just can't be self-starters. They need to be handheld. Like it's. I think a lot of people think remote working is just doing what you did in an office, but there's more to it than that. So that's the question I get more of, like, do they actually know what this means and can they work effectively and efficiently in that way?
That's fascinating because I know, like, I'm a terrible remote worker.
Oh, really?
If I'm within, you know, a 30-foot radius of my bed, there's a good chance I'm going to go and take a nap. If I'm within 30 foot of my pantry or fridge, there's a good chance I'm going to go and eat stuff I shouldn't eat. If my kids come home and want to play, I'm going to go and play. Like, I am so easily distracted. So for me, coming to the office is like my way of forcing discipline. It's like once I'm it's going to take me, you know, I have to get in my car to go and get something to eat. So I'm going to be organized. But other people are quite the opposite.
That's why I like coming to a co-working. So like I'm working in a co-working spot is the best of both worlds for me. Like I don't get my fridge here, but I can also like just, I don't have to speak to the people that are in the office, you know? So I think most of them have become friends now, so that's kind of difficult. But I used to work in a software development house and the developers used to say to me, like, we get so much more work done when you're not here. Because I would just be the office, like, chatty, you know, like, water cooler chat and tapping them on the shoulder, asking them to interview. And devs don't like to be disturbed when you're trying to ask them to interview someone. So they loved it when I was working remotely.
That's very cool. I hadn't thought about the workspace, but you're absolutely right. Like, if I had an office that was a 5-minute drive from my house rather than a 45-minute drive from my house, I could probably achieve the same.
Yeah. This is like a 15-minute walk with mountain views, so I can't complain.
Beautiful. What does it look like? So when you've got a customer that's coming in to say, hey, Michelle, can you and the team at Remote Rebellion build this team out for me of remote workers, are you seeing them create sort of an a la carte menu of, this is like fully remote, provide your own workspace, or this is remote with an allowance to go and have access to a co-working space? Or are you seeing sort of a continuum of behaviors there?
It's very different and it depends on the size of organization and their budget as well. So some of them haven't really thought that far ahead, especially their very new startup. They're like, oh, just remote, just figure it out, buy your own gear. And they hadn't really thought it through just because they're immature in their stage, and that's completely fine because they think, oh, we're doing it this way, we can figure that out. So I think it really does vary. I tend to work with smaller organizations, so the larger ones will have that figured out and have an allowance every month. But the ones I'm working with, it's like, come in, sort yourself out, because we're either going to hire you as a contractor or a freelancer on paper. That's for you to self-manage and sort that out and come in. But I'm starting to see that change a little bit, because I think people are seeing the value of having a co-working space and having like a, you know, like you said, some people just don't work effectively at home, and that's fine. So, but having a dedicated space really makes a difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a business that I just recently came across, actually two British entrepreneurs here in San Francisco. It's called Ground Floor. So rather than doing like the big concept WeWorks, they've built a business model which is tech enabled, and they've got these like retail spaces that they convert into workspaces. Ooh. But it's like not in big city locations. It's a little bit more suburban. And people can kind of be in the high street of a small town and access a coffee shop and a restaurant and a barber or whatever's there. But what I'm sensing from their model is that there probably are more companies that are not ready to, you know, buy a suite at a WeWork, but they're willing to say, hey, go and have a ground floor membership and use the space as you need to. And going back to your point earlier, if we want to get together and do an event, we can use that space to do a quick team building or social or, you know, weekly, monthly meeting.
That's cool. I'll have to get the name of that from you later and before
yeah,
I
I'll introduce
to
you.
Jot it down. Yeah, yeah, it'd be awesome.
It's cool.
There's loads of organizations. There's an organization called Othership as well. And what they do is like they have a workplace scheduler where they speak to things like comedy clubs or theaters or hotels pubs. And then you can just go and like sit in a pub and like work from there, and like you get like a, you don't get a free pint, but you might get a discount or something. Or like, so I've done that many times when I go to London. I don't want to pay for a co-working space. I just go and sit in a pub for a little bit. And it's a bit different with me because my job, I can get away with being in a non-professional environment. But I mean, if you're working in finance or something, I don't think you can get away with having a pint in your hand and trying to do some work.
You can't be doing someone's wealth management advisory in the pub.
No. So it depends on your industry. But it's great. They even have hotel lobbies that will like rent out their space, and you
can go
for free. Like it's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And you know, in your own experience, Michelle, with remote work, how are you building that team connection?
It's happened. I don't think it's accidentally. I think it's happened organically in some way by the team that I've built.
Yeah.
Of just making sure that we've got the right kind of attitude. And so I always talk about values being like open, transparent, of just being like, you know, if I screwed up, hold your hand up and talk about it as a team. We're going to make mistakes. And having rules on the communication. So Slack is for like quick message and answers. Notion is where we do our projects.
Yeah.
And once a week, we all get together on a call. It's not mandatory, but people generally enjoy being there. We'll talk about our wins of the week, personal, professional, any blockers, and then move on. And it's just like having that non-forced collaboration of like actually wanting to know what someone's getting up to. I remember one of call the other a week, and one of the team members screamed to the other guy, "Oh, there's a girl in the background. Have you got a girlfriend now?" You know, so having that, like, you know, that personal connection, as well as we all just being work all the time. Because I don't do formal very well. I don't think I would ever suit in a corporate environment.
Yeah.
So I think that informality and allowing people to be themselves, I think, has helped with that because they feel comfortable to share.
That's and what I like about what you're describing there as well is that you've kind of created, this is who we are and this is how we show up, and you're consistent with it. I think a lot of leaders, particularly through COVID, but still now, they're very inconsistent with the way that they engage with their remote workers. And then you see that other big challenge, which is where you've got the in-room, out-room, in-group, out-group dynamics, which are tricky.
And you know what? I've failed on certain parts with that because I brought the team together who were in Europe, but I had someone in Bali and someone in Argentina who I didn't have the budget to fly over to this part of Europe. And I think I screwed up a little bit there because I was like, I really excluded those two people.
I should
have just not done it at all or found the money from somewhere. I don't know. And so I think, you learn, right? It's the first time I've had a business and it's the first time I've managed a team. So I'm learning myself.
Yeah. It is interesting. Some of my friends have suggested that if you can't bring everyone together, you still bring people together that can get there and you do something social, but you make sure that when you're doing the work, that everyone's virtual. Like even if that means you're in different parts of the office, because actually being social, if we're doing a pub quiz, you know, a virtual pub quiz, it's less of an issue. But if we're trying to do work and listen to what's being said and have input, it becomes really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned from that for next time for sure. I'll find a way to integrate everyone into it on the three different time zones somehow.
it's a mission. It's a total mission. And then pre-show, you and I were talking about this really cool remote career fair that you're running. To me, I'm fascinated on two grounds. One, it just seems like a cool thing to do because it's so against like the old-fashioned job fair, career fair that's like in-person bricks and mortar. And two, you were sharing the story of it feeling like you're putting a play together because you're remotely coordinating the job fair. So tell me a little bit more about how you're seeing that take shape.
Yeah, so the idea came from, there's a big conference that is big in the remote workspace called Running Remote. Right. And I attended the last 2 years in Lisbon, and I thought they did a really good job. But it's more of a conference. You go and hear from speakers talking about the latest tech or collaboration tool, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something that was along those lines, like snippets of that, but also a way to connect people. So, you know, you have networking events, you meet people, and it's organic, and you actually have conversations with people.
Yes.
Job fairs are not like that. You come in, you have your resume in your hand, you get a free pen from this stand, and then you're on your way, and the resume's
it's
probably
awkward.
In the bin, you don't hear from them. It's really awkward. Like,
yeah.
Tell us what, like, it's a gatekeepery, like, tell us why you're good enough to be here, give us your CV. It's like almost like begging for scraps. It feels a little
yeah.
bit like, so I wanted it to be a way for people to genuinely connect. You come along as a company and you're like, okay, I'm looking for a marketing manager and a front-end dev, and I just want to meet interesting people that are interested in the recruitment space. So you're coming in with an open mind of like, I want to meet people that are in this space, that are aligned, and that you know as a business owner, the people that are attending are actually going to be the kind of people that you want to meet with, and vice versa. So
yeah.
It's a two-way street. It's not this, please let me give you my experience and please accept me. It's a two-way street. It's a conversation. I'm vetting, vetting's not the right word, but I'm curating the audience of job seekers in specific
yep.
disciplines. So there'll be sales, tech, marketing, and ops. So not the people who are, generally the people who are hiring right now are looking for someone in those spaces. And the people, as in the attendees, the job seekers who are attending, know that all of the companies joining are genuinely remote first. They're not these fake remote first that say they're remote.
Bait and switch.
They know what they're getting.
Yeah.
And like I said to you, I have no issue with hybrid. I just have an issue with people not declaring what they're about and not being open about it.
Yeah.
So the people in both spaces get that. And companies get to genuinely connect with each other and see people and hire the right people for their values that have that match.
I think that's very cool. I think the community building network, you know, building each other up is something that has gone away with the shift to virtual and remote and mm-hmm. digital, but it can absolutely be built. And I love what you were sharing as well about, you know, having avatars and video and like making it very personal.
Yeah. Shout out to Wheelo as well. Like they're a sponsor,
yeah.
but they're amazing because they're just, what they're offering is you actually feel like you're in the event, you're in the spaces, you're moving around. And I think that's quite hard
so
to
cool.
get on an online environment.
Yeah. I was always fascinated with the concept of the metaverse early on when it was just like, hey, you could turn up as who you want and you could interact with these people around products and services. I was like, that's a cool idea. I haven't yet seen it. But this Wheelo platform sounds like it's pretty close.
Yeah, it is. So I can't wait to. I mean, like I said, this is the very first of our kind. I've done lots of online events. I've done in person events. So
yeah.
this is going to be a new kind. So I'm just really excited about it.
That's cool. When is that event coming up?
It's the 9th and the 10th of May.
Oh, so not far away.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll make sure. So if any of our listeners are out there thinking about going and finding a remote work, they should absolutely follow
this up. Or if they want to hire remotely, for sure.
Or hire both sides, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really a marketplace for remote
yeah.
workers. Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah. Like, do you know back in the day when eBay was at its heyday and anytime you wanted to buy or sell anything online secondhand, eBay was like the go-to place?
Yeah.
That's my vision for Remote Rebellion in a few years.
That's very cool. And what would you say makes it different for those workers who may have tried a platform like an Upwork or a Fiverr that you mentioned earlier?
They're not fighting for scraps. And that's what I feel like Upwork and Fiverr has become. And
right.
it's just, it's not good for the soul. Like people are really like, it's really soul crushing to be like, okay, I'll reduce my rate to $5 an hour to try and compete with these other people in here. And I must get my ratings and I must get this. It's all about ratings and there's no connection. So this is like bringing the connection back into to having a genuine match. Like think of a matchmaking service, if you like.
Yeah, for remote. I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. It's a great example of like technology can take you too far down a path, So you have to keep bringing the humanity back in. You can still use technology to create the humanity, which clearly you're doing with this virtual job fair, but that's super cool. And it would be remiss of me not to congratulate you on your 70,000, 76,000, I think, followers right now. So I guess my final question for you, Michelle, is like, clearly what you're doing is important. It's catching a lot of eyes and ears. People feel strongly about it. As you look towards the future of work and, you know, economic stability coming back for many of us, like, where do you see this going? Where do you feel remote work's going to kind of level out?
I don't think it will level out. I think with, you know, you've been in recruitment, I don't know, as long as me or longer than me, there's these periods of like transition, and I've seen it across 11 years, and I'm sure people who've been in the business for longer have seen more, but I see this trajectory of the return to office and larger organizations continuing.
Yeah.
And it's to do with compliance, it's to do with control, it's to do with having their hands in the back pockets of real estate, government, like, let's not get onto the whole conspiracy theories there, but that's going to continue. But smaller organizations that people don't hear about in the news, they're going to continue. They want to save money, they want access to global talent, they want to hire quicker, they're going to go remote. So that's going to continue. What I think is going to see a crash and the great resignation is going to come back again is when the economy picks up and when bigger companies can no longer say, you have to come to the office, because people are going to vote with their feet. The more that the economy improves and people have more options, they're going to vote with their feet. And that for companies that are inflexible, they're going to say, I'm leaving to go and find this more flexible company. And then suddenly the big companies are going to come crying back and say, okay, we will do remote.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And I think it will be interesting to see which companies make it a competitive advantage that they are remote. I know there's already some out there that are well known and exist, but the ability as a small team to grab great talent, global talent, wherever it might be coming from, and achieve awesome things is, I think it's super energizing.
Yeah. And not just to get the best talent, but like actually using it as an attraction strategy to win clients and customers because you're remote. Like companies like Atlassian, Doist, people may never have heard of them had they not been work from anywhere. That's attracted people to them, and they've used the employer brand to actually enhance their company brand. So it's a win-win all around.
They're living like their brand value proposition.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a huge it's a huge USP for them.
Yeah, that's a great reminder that, you know, when you look after your employees, they look after your customers. It's a perfect example.
Yeah, for sure.
No, that's super cool, Michelle. Well, I've definitely, having been in recruiting, it's actually, I think, 25 years this year, so that's a little scary.
I didn't want to age you by saying you've been in that longer. I just got like air on the side of caution.
The gray's starting to show up. But having been in recruiting 25 years, I've done very little work around truly remote. So it's been great learning from you about what you're seeing in the space. I'm excited by it. And it's cool seeing what you're doing there as the chief remote rebel at Remote Rebellion. So if people want to find you or your content, how do they best connect?
Well, thank you, first of all. So everywhere, pretty much on website, LinkedIn, and Instagram are the three main parts, remoterebellion.com, Remote Rebellion on Instagram, and on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to connecting, maybe hiring a remote team sometime soon too.
Awesome. Like it.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,